No, I'm exaggerating. I wasn't really on the chain gang. Just the county jail, which is quite a stylish institution, by the way. Waco, Texas, a short and scenic jaunt from beautiful downtown Crawford, Texas, in McLennan County. No tacky orange overalls, McLennan County Jail features fashionable jumpsuits with huge horizontal black and white stripes. So everybody's walking around looking like a giant cat in the hat. Very Dr. Seuss. And no, they won't let you buy them for souvenirs, I already asked, so don't bother. Although they'd be a real hit at any future public demonstration or WTO protest. So this is a show about Crawford, Texas, and my personal journey from your reporter to voiceless voice behind the razor wire in Waco, Texas. How a spontaneous anti-war demonstration descends from peaceful anarchy to a fascist peace camp in a very short time. Today's program we shall call Invasion of the Peace Nazis.
These are the stories of the men whose training, skill, and courage have enforced and preserved our state law.
But before we get to that, let's begin this tale in friendlier times. Oh, by the way, my name is A.K.A. Scooter. 963-250, and you're listening to The Inner Side.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see...
Here's Cindy Sheehan being interviewed by William Rivers Pitt in Crawford, Texas.
So how did you come to get here? How did you come to make the decision?
It was a snap decision. It was totally... I made the decision as my fingers were typing that email. And it was Wednesday when I sent the email out. It was Wednesday. 14 Marines were killed on Wednesday. And then George Bush gets on the TV again and says crap about they died for a noble cause and that we have to complete the mission to honor the sacrifices of the fallen. And not only was I enraged and upset and brokenhearted about the 14 Marines dying, but when I heard him spew that filth again, I was really pissed. And so I was typing something about the 14 Marines dying and about George Bush saying that and how upset I was. And literally, as I was typing, I'm going to the VFP convention in Dallas this weekend. I don't care how far it is. I'm going to go to Crawford and drive up to the gates of the ranch and demand to meet with him and demand that he answer these questions. And at that point, I thought it was just going to be me and my sister. You know, I said, Dee Dee and I are going if anybody wants to follow us. And I kind of had a feeling if it was I was going from the VFP that some VFP guys would come with me. And this is crazy. I had no idea. People, and some guy told me, you know, I'm a little skeptical that this was spur of the moment because it's been so successful. This was totally spur of the moment.
Here I go.
Please move back.
Yeah. What you're listening to right now is George W. Bush's little phalanx motorcade driving to a Republican fundraiser a few ranches down. So he's forced to drive by the protesters at Camp Casey. And here's their response. This is good. Check it out.
Talk to Cindy! 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 Talk to Cindy!
I love that. That is protest raised to spontaneous street theater. That's art, man. And the thought for the next 25 minutes is spontaneous. I certainly can't say enough about this woman's courage and ability to articulate her passion, but I agree with her when she refers to herself as a spark that set this fire.
This pile of dead wood, dried out bushes, and withered lies has finally reached a flashpoint, and she just happened to set it off. When I was in Crawford last Thursday, I got a call from Evan Davis, who told me there were 15 vigils going on just in Columbus, Ohio. A number of them had over 100 people. The count I heard for that day was between 1,500 and 1,700 demonstrations just that day. This is from Houston Indy Media. Quote, two suspension bridges in Houston, Texas held approximately 250 supporters of Sheehan above the busy Highway 59 traffic. Supporters lined both sides of the Dunleavy and Woodhead bridges for a great view of in and outbound traffic. They held signs and candles aloft as supporters in their cars and trucks below honked horns and gave the thumbs up. Meekum Fountain, that's downtown, attracted another 250 supporters. In all, there were 12 vigils throughout Houston, including one at the regional VA office and one at George Bush Park in far west Houston. This is Houston I'm talking about. This is a place where animal rights folks, the Socialist Workers Party, the feminists, the RCP, the anti-warriors all know each other by their first names. This is unheard of. And this isn't even a movement. I've been covering demonstrations, marches, and the anti-war protests in my own peculiar way for some time now. And anything approaching this scale is usually the results of months of organizing, hundreds of thousands of hours of email, telephone, media contact, infighting, people signing up, dropping out. Can we talk about Israel? If you're listening to me, you know this drill. But this thing just happened. The first person I met in Crawford was a middle-aged woman who had driven all the way from Portland, and it was her first peace demonstration in her life. And Crawford was full of these folks. Fellow Americans, this is a phenomenon. The Cindy Sheehan phenomenon. There's no other word for it. And also the moment when the folks like those who secured the Peace House in Crawford, when Bush bought that ranch, are saying, yeah, that's why we did this. So there is hard work that paid off, but no one could have predicted this. No one's in charge. No one is fighting for leadership. There's no leaders. There's Cindy, the saint of circumstance, but no organization, no power struggle, no one excluded, no one exalted. It's been an expression of peaceful anarchy and the spirit of cooperation at its best. That's my impression, or it was last Thursday. And I don't mean anarchy as in folks who refer to themselves in those terms. I'm talking about that unconscious consciousness. Like when we drove out to Crawford last Thursday, if you were parked wrong, someone would run up and tell you, hey, you'll get towed if you park here. Nobody put that person in charge. And you could take his advice or ignore it at your own peril. He wasn't going to run off to the cops and snitch you off. Next is one of those unlikely, unconscious anarchists I interviewed last Thursday. A gentleman from Winnie, Texas, which is right out there by Vidor and Beaumont. We were discussing the rancher that lives next door to G-Dub and how he came to offer his property to Camp Casey. Check this out.
And your name is?
Melvin Phelps.
And you're from?
Winnie, Texas.
And how long you been here?
I've been here since day one. I've left a couple of times from Camp Casey, but I always come right back.
So tell us the story about the gentleman next door who decided to lend his farm out to the cops here.
Well, this is Mr. Matledge up here, a really nice fellow. I have nothing but the highest of praise for Mr. Matledge. When we first set up Camp Casey here on the Saturday, he would come by on his four-wheeler or maybe in his four-wheel drive truck, and he'd stop and speak with us. And everybody was fine, and we were just talking as friends. And then as the weekend rolled around, more vehicles began coming up, and they needed a place to park, so they began parking in front of Mr. Matledge's house, and then he became a little bit upset, and I went over and spoke with him, and I asked him what I needed to do to help him, and just talk, much like what the president should do, and this would have probably never been about here if he would have just came out and talked. Well, Mr. Matledge and I arrived in an agreement very quickly about I would help him get the cars off the road in front of his house, and he was a happy camper, so was I, because then he told me that, well, since you've done that, you can park your car on my property. So yeah, I was happy because it's a short distance to walk.
I have to jump in here and interrupt Melvin for a moment But not without all due respect, this man is a true subversive. Taking the initiative to befriend Bush's neighbor, eventually recruited into Camp Casey to the point where a circus tent, the size of a city block, was erected on his property where James McMurtry and Steve Earle performed on Saturday evening. To understand this, you have to understand real Texans. Texas is the only state that used to be its own country, and Texas nationalism still pervades the consciousness of the folks that have been here for generations. Mr. Maitland and Melvin are Texans. Only the sprawl and spawn of Rust Belt Yankee invaders, carpetbaggers, and snowbird transplant phony Texas wankers are stupid enough to believe that Bush is a Texan, with that phony-ass foghorn leghorn accent and a face that could only mutate from years of northern aristocratic inbreeding. G.W. Bush is a Connecticut Yankee in Sam Houston's court. All the real Texans know it. And the 49 other states don't count anyway. But how the land was yielded to Camp Casey took a lot of interviewing, and this is the story as best as I've cobbled it together. Sometime after Mr. Maitland, I'm not sure if that's a first or last name, made his peace with the campers, his nephew showed up and started firing off rounds from a shotgun in the air and going off on some verbal tirade of some sort. Not sure if it was politically motivated or a Budweiser moment, but shortly afterward, our friendly rancher showed up downtown at the Peace House, extremely embarrassed about the behavior of his kinfolks, and offered the property as sort of an apology and an expression of good old Texas honor and solidarity. Strange things happen when there's magic in the boiling 90-degree air that is Central Texas in August.
I'm just an American boy, raised on MTV, and I've seen all the kids in the soda pop bands, but none of them look like me. So I started looking around for a light out of the dim, and the first thing I heard that made sense was the word of Muhammad, peace be upon him. I shall La ilaha illa, there's no God but God if my daddy can see me now. Chains around my feet, you don't understand that sometimes a man's got to fight for what he believes. And I believe God is great. All praise due to him. And if I should die, I rise up to the sky just like Jesus, peace be upon him. I shall do la ilaha illa, there's no God but God. Were pure and strong, and
is he here for the duration?
Yes, I think I am. The president needs to come out. As a matter of fact, as we're sitting here, the women are, all the women here are walking up the street to the ranch, the Western White House ranch from Camp Casey. And they're, of course, carrying protesters, protest signs along with them, banners. And,
in which walk single file. Now, up here in McLennan County, you cannot stand on the roadway or walk on it. You're not supposed to. And, of course, there's some lenience about that, but as they're marching, they're trying to stay along the side of the roadway, and they're marching single file, and when they get to the Secret Service checkpoint, they will probably be stopped there, and the president would have an opportunity at that time even, Tim, to come out and speak to the people. That's all we want is our president to come out, and in the Constitution we have the right to redress our government, and that's basically what we want, is just to talk.
Thanks for talking with us.
All right, thank you.
Well, I missed the Steve Earle concert, because in reality, the magic had gone out of Camp Casey by the time I showed up with my family on Saturday. Peaceful anarchy and the spirit of cooperation is always tentative. Here in America, with Americans, and Camp Casey had been around long enough to become the target for the invasion of the peace Nazis. The peace Nazis abhor anarchy. The peace Nazis see a power vacuum, appoint themselves in charge. The peace Nazis will tell you where to stand, when it is your turn to speak, how to march, comment upon how free speech has its limits, and they always wear a Che Guevara t-shirt and a hat with a peace sign. They are often confused with COINTELPRO or FBI, but are easily differentiated from their fellow swine and pigs by the confused look on their face and the lust for power in their too closely set eyes. Which I previously mentioned in my comments about Yankee inbreeding, peace Nazis are seldom from the South. Southerners wear their fascism on their cuff. I believe I first crossed the peace Nazis at Crawford when I crossed the police line and interviewed the counter-protesters. If you've been to protests lately, you notice that we're usually separated by the police. But the cops didn't give it a thought. I said, hey, I'm the press. I want to talk to these folks. That was my first mistake. But anyway, one thing I noticed was that the counter-protesters, there's only like six of them, they were standing out in the sun. We had the shade and the free Cokes and the free water, and they're standing out in the sun with their signs and their... I figured, man, these people are dedicated. So that's why I wanted to talk to them. Unfortunately, when I was busted, the tape recorder was still running, and my wife, Wendy, wasn't able to retrieve it for a while, and it was on loop, so it recorded over my interviews with the counter-protester folks. But allow me to recap. I mean, I talked to a 15-year-old girl there whose dad was in Iraq, and I spoke with three veterans who had just come back and who had lost friends there. They were absolutely lucid in their point of view, which I didn't find particularly interesting, nor did I agree with a word they said, but I absolutely respected them. They were good people. And I was wearing a cowboy hat, and I actually offered it to one of the veterans and said, man, you got to go walk across the street and talk to these other veterans, you know? This is really weird that they're keeping us separated. And he said, no, I'm a local and the cops know me, so the cowboy hat disguise won't work. So then I walked back across the street and began to interview the folks at the protest. And, you know, I don't do straight interviews. I'm trying to have a little fun, so let's check that out.
So, I mean, you're supposedly a mother, or you could be, right? You know? So, I mean, what's the deal here? I mean, the whole, you know, this of a woman standing up to the president is just, come on. You know, where are we going? What's next? You know?
The revolution.
Okay. You know? It's kind of funny because this thing seems to be springing up all by itself, so that might fit the...
Fit the bill.
I might fit the bill. Yeah. So, are you a pacifist?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, it probably won't work for a revolution, but I mean.
Civil disobedience.
Civil disobedience?
Yeah.
That worked in India.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, how about yourself? Are you a pacifist?
Definitely.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
You're not against the Second Amendment or anything. You're in Texas, by the way. I'm warning you.
I mean, I don't know. I guess Second Amendment helped the Black Panthers, right?
I don't know. Who knows? who knows where it could lead? Who knows?
Yeah.
You know. Oh, dude, get out of the street, man. You know, I don't want to have to pull my gun.
Anyhow, I'm the author of Freedom Underground. And I am the guy that set up, with a lot of other friends in Canada and the United States, Underground Railroad for our troops that are going to pull the trigger on themselves. You've heard about this, right?
They're not, I mean, instead of pulling the trigger on themselves, right?
Instead of pulling the trigger on themselves, that's right. So a lot of these guys don't want to redeploy. They come back. Probably 75% of them are post-traumatic stress disorder or more. And one way or another, if they go back, a lot of them feel they're not going to come back again. And so the option is, like during Trudeau days in Canada, that the Underground Railroad hooked up. There's people all throughout Canada now that will accept American deserters.
Really? I mean, because Canada, last I heard, was not that cooperative in this effort.
There, Jeffrey House is a lawyer who was a draft resister during the Vietnam War. He's the lawyer. He's a human rights judge for the Canadian government, and he's also the lawyer for all these, probably 30 right now, including one man, his wife, and four kids. And they've got to go through a long process, which takes years and years, to actually get them back out of the country for the United States to extradite them. So in the meantime, we'll find other ways. You know, if Canada refuses them, they're going to lose their moral standing in the world, largely. You know, and I don't mind doing that. I'm a Canadian myself, so I have no problem putting the pressure on this Martin government up there. And
so you're a Canadian, and you ended up a veteran, or did you? I mean, how did that happen? Tell me this story.
All right. Well, I immigrated to the United States. My dad graduated from Veterinary College at Guelph University. And at that point, we went to Alberta, Saskatchewan, and finally immigrated to the United States in the middle 50s. And I was raised in the United States through school. And after coming out of the U.S. Army in 67, I was in 64 to 67, I decided I didn't want to live here anymore. I volunteered for Nam, but they kept me in Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Oh, which is worse?
Well, I'm sure that Vietnam was worse.
Yeah, actually, that was facetious. So, Raymond, hey, Raymond, dude. Look, he's my son, and we're trying to keep him out of the Army. Right. So he's from Houston. He's from the United States. So are you ready to go in the Army? You got the haircut.
A little.
Ready to go to the Army?
I said a little.
Oh, you kick some ass and shoot some people?
I would think I would do good in the Civil War.
In the Civil War? Really? No. That ain't gonna work because, you know, on which side?
North.
All right, there we go. Okay. Okay, we've been retrieved. Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the background, a little Eichmann who calls himself John Paul Schwartz. Come on, I couldn't make up a name like that. John Paul Schwartz? That's as improbable as Shabazz Winchester. But nevertheless, I've been targeted by the peace Nazi. A real amateur peace Nazi, by the way. I mean, but how do peace Nazis come about in a place like Camp Casey? Well, it's pretty simple. So this is typical arrogant ruling class scum we're talking about. When ruling class scum are exposed to peaceful anarchy in the spirit of cooperation, they begin to vomit blood and breathe fire. They scramble for their swastikas, wink and squeal and stomp their hoofs, and after all, they have put themselves in charge. They have filled the power void, and dissent will not be tolerated. They have camped out, and the protesters come and go. But the Crawford Police Department is the constant. So they gravitate to the familiar. And in no time, they are police collaborators. They know the cops by name. And the demonstrators are strangers. The protesters are rabble that must be contained and controlled and squeezed into the mold of the well-behaved peace Nazi parameters. Weird behaviors, microphones, celebration, laughter are not to be tolerated. This is serious! So let's review this citizen's arrest by a ruling class police collaborator. Here's the audio in sequence, narrated, but unedited. Behold, the penultimate peace Nazi in action.
And more people want to know. I was talking to people across the street.
Oh, yeah, what are they like?
Yeah.
Totally cool.
Really?
Yeah, you know, what's really weird is that they're not, I mean, the cops are not letting the people who are known to be on that side of the street to come on this side of the street because they're afraid of violence and stuff. Because, I mean, there's a couple of veterans over there, and they really want to talk to the veterans over here, and they're not letting it happen because they're afraid that citizens won't behave themselves.
Right.
And, you know, it's, I don't know.
That could be an important conversation.
It goes to the whole base and the whole concept of freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, and telling people, okay, you're on this side and you're on this side and you can't talk to each other. So I mean, who gives anybody the right to do that? I mean,
yeah.
And who are you?
I'm Nikki.
Are you Nikki? Are you her sister?
Yeah.
I could be her mother, actually.
Could be.
Yeah. We're writing partners.
Writing partners. Do you write novels, or?
She's written a novel. We're working on a television
novel?
Show together.
I'm from Fox News, by the way. My name is Adolf for Brains. I'm wondering why all you people are here, you know, demeaning motherhood.
What is your name?
You have no answer for that? Demeaning the whole, you know, very basis of motherhood. You know, it's just like being used by these lefty, you know, commie.
So, anyway, here we go. I'm being grabbed from behind by this Crawford peace Nazi swine.
Yeah, Zaphod Beeble.
Yeah, let me see your press credentials.
Here, oh, hold on. You got it.
Oh, I don't know.
All right, let's go. Off my sight. Off my sight. Let's go.
So check it out. This peace Nazi pig is telling me to get off his sight. I'm on a public road in Crawford, Texas. The cops aren't messing with me, but this pig is telling me to get off his sight.
Who are you, by the way?
Off my sight.
Who are you? Wait a minute.
Hey!
Tell me
this knee needs to go.
So at this point, the police collaborator is pointing to me and calling in his brethren police, saying, this man has to go.
Yeah, by the way.
Show me your credentials.
Well,
okay, if you ain't got him, off my side.
Now, at this point, this slimy little piece of rat feces has his hand around my arm, and he's got his palm on my back, and he's shoving me down the road. So here's my brilliant reply.
Wait, don't touch. If you touch me again, I'm going to hammer your face.
And he immediately oinked back.
You're going to do what?
I said, if you touch me, I'm going to you up. I don't like being...
Put your hand on.
Oh, that's right. Here comes the heat.
Put your hand behind back.
You've been listening to The Inner Side. My name is Scooter. Stay tuned next week for more from Crawford, Texas, so that all of those who claim that I've learned my lesson will be proven wrong once again.
His truck had no armor, and when it came under fire, it and half the soldiers in it became a funeral pyre. Cindy, she was sleeping the moment Casey died, and she knew she'd never see him standing by her side. There was no consolation, no safe place she could run. She is every mother, and he was every mother's son. The president, he told her, he died for a noble cause. But Cindy's wondering exactly what that was, since they never found the weapons. Now that Casey's gone, it seems that oil is the game, and Casey was the pawn. Cindy's got some questions, and so does everyone, because she is every mother, and he was every mother's son. ¶¶